A Boundless Reservoir. My name is Chris Norris, and good Thursday morning. So now we are actually in the presence of a little bit of snow slash sleet, however you want to describe that. Anna Grace was very disappointed that we had a delay in school where we go to Cramerton Christian on the way to school. She kept asking, now, look, there's snow and ice on the road, like where the bridges were, and the main parts were, you know, pretty much just wet. And she would keep saying, don't you think that we should have just stayed out of school today, Dad? So her opinion was is that there was a wrong decision that was made for them to have to journey out in this ferocious weather that's before us. You know, I do feel that tonight probably it would get very cold. So we'll see what happens with the aftermath of this blizzard. I'm being facetious, of course. But, yeah, it is pretty to see. You know, it's always, we don't get it that often here in the parts of the Piedmont in North Carolina. So there are other areas that probably receive more. But, yeah, so it was a joy to kind of just see it coming down this morning as I was drinking my cup of coffee there, watching it on the back deck, and, yeah, just kind of looking over the area there. But, you know, it's always the purity, I guess you could say, how everything just becomes white, lightens up, you know, and so therefore the snow just, yeah, just a difference, if you will. Kind of also basically impacted a little bit with our Wednesday night. You know, normally we have our Wednesday night meals at church with a Bible study. And of course, I think attendance had dropped off just because of the anticipation of what could happen. So attendance was a little bit down last night. I know some churches in the area, I do believe, even halted their plans as far as service for Wednesday service. But it was still good to be there. Got to have Bible study and see everybody. And even we had pizza last night. So, yeah, I had probably ate too many slices of pizza. I think I only ate two, actually. So I did. I'll pat myself on the back for two slices of pizza. You know, cold pizza is good. I don't know if any of you guys or gals like cold pizza. It's probably not like, you know, something that people usually think about. But, yeah, in the morning, it's good with a cup of coffee. That's a good combination, isn't it? Very healthy. But, yeah, just kind of holding on today with Owen Lake. He's not feeling well. He's under the weather, so we're at home with him. He had a temperature yesterday, and so going to be hunkering down under the covers, I guess. So we'll monitor his progression, and hopefully he gets better. You know, a lot of things as far as in the world right now. I'll be preaching this Sunday at church, and the passage I'll be speaking out of is Matthew chapter 26, verse 1 through 13, and just kind of wrapping some thoughts together around that passage. And one of the things that I cannot escape, and I think it's true for even us as believers, is that there are evil things and immorality that reigns within our world and that we are surrounded by. Now, I should preface before that statement that there are other things before us as well that are good and God has blessed us with that we are also surrounded by. But there seems to be a constant bombardment of evilness and things that we either hear of, read about, or see. And I sense that sometimes I think that can play into our mentality. Is the question, you know, that's cliche, is why do bad things happen to good people? if God is in control and fully sovereign, then why do these things happen? And of course, you know, that could also be played into some understanding to where individuals aren't really gravitating towards God's power and his plan in their life. And that's, again, that has to be reassured to the Christian. And I think, as we've described in the past, sometimes that's not always an opportunity where we would find ourselves in the midst of someone who's hurting, right? For instance, I think this has been used before, like if, say, this is completely hypothetical situation, if a family, a mother and father experience a loss of life with a young child from a bad accident. I mean, you don't say, well, you know, God's sovereign over this, and so, you know, you just need to suck it up, buttercup, and he's got a plan. In that moment, of course, we would show a lot of compassion, a lot of understanding, but we would be striving as under-shepherds, as pastors, and even as fellow believers, to carry them towards the understanding of that God does have a plan, even in the midst of something that is so horrific and so painful. And I think that is the case in which we find ourselves in the midst of Matthew 26 and verse 1 through 13, where Jesus basically foretells his death and then the occurrence of what happens of a couple wrongful acts, and then the recognition of seeing that even in the midst of wrongful acts and evilness, that God is still in control and God still has a plan. So I think that's the benefit for the believer, is having that hope, having that promise. So just kind of working through that thought process and just kind of thinking upon those things is that ultimately, no matter how bad it gets, no matter the evilness and the things that are wrong and the immorality that seems to reign within our world, that again, we see either on the news or read about, or however it is that we receive those messages from other people, I think the encouragement for the believer is God has a plan. God has a plan, and that ultimately we can rest in that plan and be assured and not disheartened. So I'd like to just kind of lay that out and let us be reminded of that truth and the encouragement that we find. The encouragement that we find when Jesus closes out that this gospel will be preached. The kings and kingdoms and these other things that seem to occupy our mindset, our psyche, will fade away. And not only will the gospel be preached, but the acts of this woman that basically emptied this alabaster jar of perfume and anointed me for my burial, which I foretold, it will continue on. The message of Jesus did not end because of his crucifixion and the plan and the schemes of those leaders of the day. So just wanted to share that. I think it's encouraging to read that, to understand that. And just it's amazing to see God's word, how it penetrates the soul and helps us in the moments that we're in. Moving on to, we'll be back. Just wanted to share that. We'll be back in James today. James chapter 5. James chapter 5, verse 1. Come now, says here, come now, you rich. He says, weep and howl for your miseries which are coming upon you. Your riches have rotted and your garments have become moth-eaten. Your gold and your silver have rusted, and their rust will be witness against you and will consume your flesh like fire. It is in the last days that you have stored up your treasure. Behold, the pay of the laborers who mowed your fields and which has been withheld by you cries out against you. And the outcry of those who did the harvesting has reached the ears of the Lord of Sabbath. You have lived luxuriously on the earth and led a life of wanton pleasure. You have fattened your calves, your hearts, I'm sorry, you have fattened your hearts in a day of slaughter. You have condemned and put to death the righteous man, and he does not resist you. So here James, of course, is speaking to those of wealth and riches, material possessions, and the things that have benefited them in the life that they've lived. And, you know, we would sometimes equate those who are wealthy maybe, you know, not that we even kind of sometimes witness or maybe shy away from those of wealth, however that may look. I don't really know if I would say that I know people who are of great wealth. I mean, there are probably people that are wealthy and don't actually flaunt it, and then there are some who maybe are wealthy and flaunt that before others and their riches. But I think James is the implication here that he's speaking to basically leads us to an understanding that the things that are before a man who places, or woman, who places all their desire and all their hope in the earthly or temporal things of this earth, and then that takes precedence over God in their life, the tragedy becomes the end of what that looks like, and basically that there is no eternal security found in the riches that they've placed their hope in. And so I feel that, you know, God is reminding those who have wealth to be careful. This is more so a warning, but also a fact. And if you have operated in this manner, and you've acted in this way, in a way that's just basically heinous and wrong, that you've misused what God has blessed you with, right? Because ultimately, we would say that there are probably those who are wealthy and they, again, misuse what God has allowed them to be a part of. It's no different than the person who doesn't have much at all. It's all in how they were good stewards of what God allowed them to be a part of. And I think this is true for those who have great wealth. Those who have much to basically share and give of what they have. You know, oftentimes you would consider the mentality of people, even with those who don't have, there are instances like, there are instances, of course, that I'm reminded of even right now when you're sitting at a stoplight and, you know, you see people that will hand money to the person who's homeless. And, you know, I would say that a lot of those times those cars aren't limos or, you know, however we classify the fancy cars that cost, you know, lots of money. I mean, cars are expensive anyway right now. I think vehicles in of themselves are way overpriced, but compared to what they used to be. But anyway, that's a whole nother topic. But James is implying basically there's a understanding of where there's been misuse of what this wealth, these riches, and they've taken over these people's hearts. And so therefore they've, you know, or not that they've taken over, but people have allowed these things to become magnified in a way to where it's just it's a craving, where there's more desire, there's more deceit in how they operate to gain these things. I mean, he describes about not paying the ones who have basically worked for you and holding back and not giving what should have been rendered for the services provided. So I think it's a reminder for those who have wealth, because there may be some, right? And you may be one, I'm not sure. But it's a reminder that if you have wealth and you have riches, that you honor God with those things. Because the outcome of that is that those things will fade away, and they, as James clearly describes, they will rust. And there's no, again, eternal security found in those riches themselves. So if we're building up, this is a example that the Bible clearly states, if we're building up treasures here on earth, and it is fleeting, and it is like sand that washes and falls away. Or you can say, you know, for people who find their hope in the things of this world that bring some kind of temporal satisfaction of either riches or wealth or however that looks, and the fame and glory, It can all be gone. You know, I often am reminded of those who get these big payouts for sports and how they sign these contracts, and you know, you say millions of dollars, and then you hear stories later of how that money and fame and everything else is literally gone for some of those athletes. I'm not saying for all of those athletes, but some of those. And so it's a tragedy because it's almost like those sensibilities of how they viewed that money, how they viewed that fame, and what they placed the emphasis on was misdirected and misused. And I think a lot of times that's what occurs with those who are in positions to where they've landed. They've landed in this place to where they think that, you know, this is it. This is it. You know, this is what I've waited my whole life for. You've even heard people say that. And the tragedy to have that even some understanding that they think that that is it when they've missed it. And so James is implying that if we find ourselves in a position to where you are wealthy or you have riches, I think it's a good reminder to understand that those riches can be taken away, and that they're not as long lasting as we would probably compare them to. You know, again, the way in which God operates is that His majesty and His glory is forevermore, and there is no beginning or end. But you know, for the bank account, there is there is a countdown to zero. And I think that's always the case when we find ourselves with the thing of which money can get in the way of how people operate. Don't place the value above the value of that money above God. Don't place the way in which you operate. Don't let that trickle down into your life and how those interactions with other people and how you treat other people become something that's a misrepresentation, because there will be mourning and weeping, as James describes. If there's a life that's a pattern that basically symbolizes a life that's more devoted to the riches and the wealth of this world, then there's not a good representation, and more than likely there's not been heart change for that individual. So be careful with that mentality. And I would pray that, again, if you are a wealthy person, if you are a person where God has entrusted you with much, then use it wisely. And just as the same would be said as a person who doesn't have much at all, that maybe the world's eyes would view it as someone who is lowly estate or doesn't have a lot of money. I think the significance for us is that we're faithful with what God has given us, and we use it to the glory of God for how He sees fit and not how we desire to use it. A boundless reservoir. My name is Chris Norris, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.